Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Grey Leopard Code with Gary Norris Gray. Gary will be coming to you each Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, talking sports live on GLC.
Playoffs do begin next week, and both teams potentially could be part of that.
As ESPN reporting the...
This is an acceptance letter.
On campus. Yesterday at noon at the end of the banquet. Winston-Salem State quarterback Jaree Johnson went to the restroom and five Virginia State players went to the bathroom and beat him up, allegedly. The IAAA championship game had been canceled. The volleyball game between two schools were also canceled. And what ESPN didn't tell you, which I will tell you, is the Mount Britt had a record. The Mount Britt is a JUCO transfer. This was a bad light on CIAA and HBCU. The NCAA playoffs will start next week. Division One, AA playoff begin next week. The question remains, well, when is Arizona State ready to get a bid? And most likely, Virginia State will not get a bid because it isn't. There's an NCAA law that says that if you do not play your championship games, you cannot get a playoff bid. I think maybe this rule will be waived for the Winston-Salem State Rams because of the incident. The campus police will continue the investigation. As I said before, one player was arrested for the alleged attack. That was sophomore running back Lamar Britt, who has a 75-hour bond. And the reason why the game was canceled, for many reasons why this game was canceled. One, Virginia State was a home team. Two, Winston-Salem State University fans did not want to sit in the visitor's side. That was a potential combustion ready to happen. Two, like I said before, the junior college transfers being on the field. And three, the winner would have got an home field advantage in the playoffs. Now, it leads to another event. The NCAA will most likely be sued. Virginia State will most likely be sued. The NCAA will most likely be sued. Now, the NCAA is no part of this. So we're going to see how they play on Monday when they go back to the offices in Kansas City. So the lawsuits mean green. HBCUs can let the board losing money like this. Also, on the campus of Winston-Salem State, they lost potentially millions of dollars for this game being canceled. So, we have a problem here. The president of the CIAA president of Winston-Salem State University and the president of Virginia Dayton are going to have to come to a powwow and discuss this and make this clear. Because basketball season is starting. And Virginia Dayton will play with Winston-Salem State University at some point in time. And you know, guys, the yahoos and crazy folks who want payback. So, CIAA, Virginia State, and Winston-Salem State University are going to have to deal with this in a serious manner. It's been a fun week, folks. It's been a fun week. I will give you a form of Michael and Tony and Calvin Reggie will probably in when they are done. We will discuss it more as we move down to Miami. And another issue. We got 10 minutes. I'm going to do this. Reggie Incognito. It is episode.
I've known you, been friendly with you for about 5 years. A few years ago, trained you in my mixed martial arts cross-training program. But even with that said, there are certain things that have come out in this whole situation that are difficult for me to grasp, for everybody to grasp. So we're going to cover all that. But I want to start with October 28th. The day that your teammate, Jonathan Martin, walked out, several people's lives. It may have changed the culture inside NFL locker rooms. But take me inside that day. What happened that day?
The day of the incident, we had a tough loss to the Patriots. We were coming back on a short week. We're playing the Bengals the next week. Seemed like a normal day. We're in the lunchroom about 4 o'clock, getting ready to go out to practice. And we decided we were going to pull a prank on Jonathan. We've done this prank many times before. Jonathan's been in on this prank when we've done it to other offensive linemen. And basically the prank is we had 12, 13 offensive linemen sitting at the offensive line table. We have our special table in the lunchroom we eat at every day. And there was one seat open at the end of the table. And I told the guys, listen, when J-Mart sits down, we're all going to grab our trays, we're going to go put them away, and we're going to leave him there sitting by himself. And like I said, we've done this many times before. So John comes, he sits down, we all get up, we grab our trays, we're taking off, we're all laughing and carrying on, and John grabs his plate of food, chucks it on the floor, runs in the locker room, grabs his keys, and he's gone.
We haven't heard from Jonathan Martin, but we have heard from an attorney, David Cornwell, who has been hired to advise the family, where he says Jonathan endured harassment that went far beyond the traditional locker room hazing. And goes on to say, among other things, Jonathan endured a malicious physical attack on him by a teammate and daily vulgar comments. Again, you talked about the traditional locker room hazing. He is claiming it went far beyond that.
I can't wrap my head around that because I've been there since day one. And like I said, nothing's normal in a locker room. And traditional hazing, there's nothing malicious done when hazing.
There is a lot of incidents that you have had. And you would think if there was somebody who could have noticed and who would say, hey, maybe I could take something too far, it would be you.
Correct. I've never shied away about talking about my past. I've been a cancer in locker rooms in my past. I have been selfish. I have been I haven't been a good teammate. And from where I started to where I am now is a world of difference. And I've had plenty of bumps along the road. I've made plenty of mistakes. Mistakes I've learned from, mistakes that have changed me, mistakes that have made me realize I need to get help. I've sought counseling. I've made changes in my personal life. I've done the steps necessary to grow, and I understand that this isn't final, I'm not perfect, and I'm still growing. And it makes me realize now, it makes me take a look back at my actions, and it makes me realize, you know, Maybe I need to change my ways again.
But during that time, you're always in the middle of it. And after you're saying all the work that you've done, you're in the middle of it once again.
Right.
You're right smack dab, right back in the middle. And not just in the middle of it, in the middle of whether it's bullying, the N-word, do you almost feel like you can't get out of your own way?
Yes and no. Yeah, every time a situation arises, every time I'm faced with adversity, people want to drag me right back in and throw me right back into that old mold. I get that. This is a deal where I was a close friend with Jonathan, and we're brothers, we're teammates, and this kind of caught me off guard, this kind of caught me by surprise. If I would have known that this was hurting John, if John would have, we'd spend plenty of time one-on-one outside of football. If John would have came to me once, or if John, one of our other teammates would have come to me once and said, listen, lay off John. He's had enough of it. It's been too much. I would have been the first person not only to change myself, but to change people around me. You can ask anybody in the Miami Dolphins locker room who had John Martin's back the absolute most, and they'll undoubtedly tell you me. John never showed signs that football was getting to him, the locker room was getting to him.
You're saying you don't know what led to this. Teammates are saying we don't know. His side has clearly said we do know. Okay, and there's bullying involved. There was a voice message left. I'm going to read it to you. You did leave this voice message.
Yes, I did leave this voice message.
And it's, hey, what's up, you half and word piece of black. I saw you on Twitter. You've been training 10 weeks. I want a blank in your mouth. I'm going to slap your blank mouth. Going to slap your real mother across the face. Laughter. You're still a rookie. I will kill you. You hear that. Going back to that now, do you look at that and say, I left that for Jonathan Martin?
When I see that voicemail, when I see those words come up across the screen, I'm embarrassed by it. I'm embarrassed by my actions. But what I want people to know is the way Jonathan and the rest of the offensive line and how our teammates, how we communicate, it's vulgar. It's not right. When the words are put in the context, I understand why a lot of eyebrows get raised, but people don't know how John and I communicate to one another. For instance, a week before this went down, Jonathan Martin texted me on my phone, I will murder your whole effing family. Now, did I think Jonathan Martin was going to murder my family? Not one bit.
So he left that that text for you?
He texted me that. I didn't think he was going to kill my family. I knew it was coming from a brother. I knew it was coming from a friend. I knew it was coming from a teammate. That just puts in context how we communicate with one another.
But there's one thing of saying that. Another thing, with a white man using the N-word.
Well, and that's...
How do you tell America, how do you expect anybody in America to believe you're not a racist?
Right. I'm not a racist. And to judge me by that one word is wrong. In no way, shape, or form is it ever acceptable for me to use that word, even if it's friend to friend, on a voicemail.
How much in today's locker room is it thrown around by African Americans and white players?
It's thrown around a lot. It's a word that I've heard John use a lot. Not saying it's right for when I did it in the voicemail, but there's a lot of colorful words thrown around the locker room that we don't use in everyday life. The fact of the matter remains, though, that voicemail was left on a private voicemail for my friend, and it was a joke.
Right, wrong, or indifferent, because of all this, you've become the face of bullying in America. Someone thinks of a bully, they think of Richie Incognito.
This isn't an issue about bullying. This is an issue of mine and John's relationship where I've taken stuff too far, and I didn't know it was hurting him.
Did Jonathan Martin overreact, or Jonathan was hurting that much?
I can't sit here and tell you who overreacted, who did what. I can just sit here and be accountable for my actions. And my actions were coming from a place of love. No matter how bad and how vulgar it sounds, that's how we communicate. That's how our friendship was. And those are the facts, and that's what I'm accountable for.
You're telling me there wasn't any signs going into that?
You know, as the leader, as his best friend on the team, that's what has me miffed, how I missed this. And I never saw it. I never saw it coming.
There's so many subplots in this. How much has come out where you've looked at it and said, that's not even close?
I think the whole thing I've been sitting there saying, that's not even close. It sounds terrible. It sounds, when it's on the screen, it sounds like I'm a racist pig. It sounds like I'm a meathead. It sounds a lot of things that it's not. And I wanted to clear the air just by saying I'm a good person.
You obviously, you've had a very checkered history.
Mm-hmm.
From way back in college all the way up to recently with the last year with the incident at the golf course. You're sitting up there and you're saying, hey, I'm a good guy. It's difficult for, I think, America to grasp that when all they see are the episodes.
Right. No question. And if you go by just all the knucklehead stuff that I've pulled in the past, done in the past, you're sitting in your home and you're thinking, this guy's a loose cannon. This guy's a terrible person. This guy's a racist. When that couldn't be farther from the truth. If I was a racist and I was bullying John Martin, when the press went in there and asked them questions, that locker room would have said, listen, we saw this, we saw that. I'm proud of my guys for having my back and telling the truth. But the fact of the matter is, when John left the team on Monday, we played a game on Thursday. I spoke with John on Friday.
But you spoke with him?
I texted with him. I text messages. I just spoke with him through text message. And he texted me and said, I don't blame you guys. I blame some stuff in the locker room. I blame the culture. I blame what was going on around me. And when all this stuff got going, swirling, bullying got attached to it, and my name got attached to it, I just texted him as a friend and was like, what's up with this, man? And he said, it's not coming from me. I haven't said anything to anybody. And I'm like, you know, okay.
But these be texts you'd be willing to share?
No question. I'll give you, after this interview, I'll give you my phone, and we'll walk through all these texts.
Okay.
And I will show you the framework of a friendship.
If Jonathan Martin was sitting right here next to you, what would you say to him?
I think I'd give him a big hug right now because we've been through so much, and I'd just be like, dude, what's going on? Why didn't you come to me? If he were to say, listen, you took it way too far. You hurt me. I would just apologize and explain to him exactly what I explained to you. And I apologize to his family that they took it as malicious, but I never meant it that way.
With the incognito, and as it is related to what happened, let's take a look at what Shannon Sharpe had to say. And Shannon did exactly what I would have said. Take it away, Shannon.
Tell you what you want to hear. People will tell you what they think you'll believe, and then they'll tell you the truth. From what I'm hearing from the Dolphins, from what I've read in the paper, I don't believe they're telling the truth. Ted Wells will get to the bottom of the truth, but I want to talk about a culture that was fostered in that locker room and was allowed to flourish. The Miami Dolphins locker room probably consists of 75-80% blacks. If you allow Richie Incognito to walk around in an open locker room and to use a racial epithet that most black Americans, all black Americans, know the stigmatism and the hate and the vitriol that comes with that word. If you allow him to do that, you are encouraging him to do that. It has to go unchecked. I read, and I don't know, it's a legend, that some black players said Richie Incognito was an honorary black. There's no such thing. This tells me everything I need to know about the Miami Dolphins locker room. How we got here and why we got here. Because so many people, if you don't understand it, because I'm 45, I grew up in rural South Georgia. Maybe I'm a disconnect with me, JB. Maybe it's me. Just ask your parents, ask your grandparents, the mountain that they climbed so a black person in America can have respect, can have dignity, and you allow this in an open locker room to take place is unacceptable. I'm so disappointed. I just hope that someone was misquoted. I hope I'm wrong. If they didn't allow Richie Incognito to say this racially charged word in an open locker room and go unchecked, that's unacceptable. I'm embarrassed for it because if he said that to Martin, Jonathan Martin, he didn't only say that, he's talking to you too. Because if you're black, you know what that word means.
You know what, Shannon, I would just say this.
It's right. That's right. If he allowed to do that locker room and do what he said, say what he had to do, this man was allowed to get away with unspeakable bullying, which is what it was. Call it like it is. That's what it was. Yesterday, Martin went with the NFL official for 4 hours after the meeting. Martin met the press, and he said he wouldn't make any more statements after he met with the Miami Dolphins, which is the correct way to do it. Meanwhile, Vito and Incognito filed a grievance against the NFL. Meanwhile, we get to know that Incognito was getting paid. This is a complete mess. And remember, folks, BSN broke the issue of the alleged gay issue. And it's still there, folks. Now, every sports network is on a bandwagon. Remember, Michael and I are the first. We will always be the first. And, you know, the NFL, in the last place, they want to deal with gay issues. The macho sport. And the Dolphins will not win another game the rest of the year. Their season is gone. As you witnessed last weekend, they lose to the 0-8 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That proved my point. This team is done for the rest of the year. The coaching staff is not looking for new jobs because they'll be unemployed by the end of the year. This team will go make a complete makeover. And it should. The NFL, Johnny Come Lately, will now enforce a new no bullying and no hazing laws. Yeah, where were you years ago? And you know, they had maternities, sororities, gentlemen's clubs, they all do this. The other day, on campus at University of California, Berkeley, another fraternity thrown off campus because of what? Hazing. And then, it does not give you self-esteem. It does not build brotherhood. I've been there, done that. Trust me, it doesn't work. Back in the day, yeah, maybe it did, but we're not that day anymore. It's a new time and a new era. And Richie Incognito made it clear. They had to stop. When you allow a person of another ethnic to call you a name and get away with it, they had to stop. And to allow it to be called honorary, and you can't add that. The same thing goes on in Japan. Some Japanese think they're honorary whites. And look what's happened in that country. See, you can't have this. You are who you are. I'm going to take a break. This has gone way too far. And the Miami Dolphins, the NFL, Martin and Richie Incognito have to deal with this. We'll take a break.
Contributions you're making, and just not only you know, venturing into new frontiers and taking sports to the next level, but being mindful of people in our community, our population, who count and who matter, and what you're doing in media is even more of a statement to that effect. So thank you kindly, sir. But as for what actually prompted me to write the book, well, I think there were several factors, not the least among them when I saw what the social reaction was from the community, and more specifically the media. It became obvious to me that the media was more intent to infuriate rather than to inform. So when they got a hold of this, it was all about trying to get ratings and revenues, either ratings through television or revenues through print media. And I thought it was unfortunate. And then the other part of the social reaction that concerned me was that there was this issue of race. Michael Vick did what he did to the dogs. He was wrong, but he was not the first professional athlete to be involved in dogfighting. LaShawn Johnson was also arrested and pled guilty to his involvement in dogfighting. He was a running back for the New York Jets. Kentel Woods was a basketball player for the Portland Trailblazers. He, too, pled guilty for his involvement in dogfighting. But neither of them was sent to prison. So why Michael Vick? Well, of course, we know historically there's been a greater intolerance for quarterbacks who are black. And then more importantly, at the time of this unfortunate dogfighting investigation, Vick was the highest paid player in the game, 10-year, $130 million contract, and he was also garnering another $60 million in endorsements. So he was clearly a target. The Humane Society of the United States, PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, they targeted him quite clearly. And one of their strategies, in particular the Humane Society, is that of economic sabotage. And so you saw this at work, and you came to realize, as I did, that there was something going on that was way beyond the dogs. And when I saw it from that vantage point, I decided to write about it.
It's very interesting you brought up that he's the highest paid football player in football. It's also interesting to know that the American media attacked Serena Williams, who was the highest paid tennis player in the world. They also attacked Tiger Woods, the highest paid golfer in the world. And insult to injury, they attacked Alex Rodriguez in baseball. So every single sport, the highest for the next 5 years, the media attacked all five of these athletes.
And it's a shame. And I'm glad you highlighted it across sports spectrums, if you will, because that's a good point. It's more than a coincidence. On the one hand, there are writers who will write about them and their exploits in a positive way because it's their job to do so, and they want to write a good story. But there's also an attempt to try to catch them with their guards down, if you will, and to use the media to cut them down, and that's not good. It's terribly unfortunate. There's an awful history of that in America and America's sports reporting media.
Can you tell a little bit more about the history of Michael Vick at Virginia and his brother and the career of Michael Vick from Virginia up to Philadelphia?
Yeah, it's been something to observe. On the one hand, he obviously went to some great heights in terms of what he achieved, especially given the fact that coming out of Virginia Tech, there were people who questioned as to whether or not he could have a career as a legitimate quarterback in the National Football League. In his book, which I also cite in my book, Vick talked about the people like Bill Walsh who questioned whether he'll be ready. In fact, Walsh said Vick would need 3 years before he could actually be thought of as a quarterback who could lead a team in the National Football League. He obviously outdid that. Within 3 years, he had already had a couple of playoff appearances and Pro Bowl berths under his belt. So he outdid those low expectations. But I think in looking at the larger scheme of what his career has been, he's learned some hard lessons. And I think that success happened to him so fast at Virginia Tech and in the NFL that he developed this false sense of security that somehow, he could, do what Michael Vick wanted to do and that he could escape, some of the pitfalls that others have suffered. And, of course, we know that he received a rude awakening. In fact, to kind of underscore how naive he was, he said when the whole dogfighting thing first unfolded, he felt like it wasn't anything that money couldn't make go away. So it just tells you what happened with the spoils of riches to him.
Well, five weeks ago, they were a record of 8-1 of black quarterbacks winning their games on the weekend at NFL. Now that's very interesting because that same weekend, ESPN, Fox Sports Network, CBS Sports did not say one single word about the 8-1 records of black quarterbacks. It's an historical black moment. And my friend, Fred Whitted, who's down at Winston-Salem, said, if we don't tell our story, it will not be told. And this is a historical event with 8-1 one weekend.
That's amazing. And I'm glad that's a very important stat line to share. And the thing about it is, it's not lost on them. But they're not going to tell us that because that's a storyline they'd rather not have to tell. And I think it's also revealing, too, because it shows what's on the horizon. More and more of these teams, NFL owners, are realizing that, you know what, hey, if you can't beat them, you know, you might as well let them join you because that's what's taking place here. We know when there was a shift, you know, right after World War II when blacks were once again readmitted into the National Football League, it wasn't because NFL owners wanted them in the league. It's because they couldn't afford not to have them. They couldn't compete without them. In fact, Paul Brown, who was then the coach of the Cleveland Browns, they were part of the All-American Football Conference. He was using Marion Motley and Bill Willis, and they became the most dominant football team, period. Not just in NFL. They weren't even in the NFL, in fact. They were in the AAFC. And because Paul Brown had built this powerhouse, you know, NFL teams realized, you know what, we better get on to this. Because the league, given its own brothers, would have never allowed blacks into the league. We know that you out in the West Coast area, Gary, that it came down to a stadium use issue. Municipal Stadium was owned by the city of Los Angeles. And so blacks and the NAACP and others questioned how is it that the NFL could use, the Rams, that is, of the NFL could use Municipal Stadium while the league was in the midst of a gentleman's agreement that barred black players. So the league gradually started allowing blacks in because, A, the Rams wanted to be able to use the stadium, and, B, they could see that what Paul Brown was doing was building a powerhouse, not only in terms of his team being competitive, but also at the gate, because black players were there. Many black patrons would go to those games. And so he was also getting a decided advantage in terms of attendance at his game. So having said as much, we're looking at the black quarterback today. What we're actually seeing is history being sort of recycled and being retold. Historically, they didn't want quarterbacks who were black. Now they become this sort of necessity because how do you win without them? And you describe an 8-1 record in one Sunday. That's pretty outstanding, to say the least.
Well, I think what really broke it up was the old American football, the old American Football League, and the old American football. What the AFL did was get all the HBCU stars. The Oakland Raiders, my Oakland Raiders, and seven HBU stars. The Kansas City teams had 9 HBCU stars. And what they did was they improved the game of football. AFL was more exciting, more faster. Marlon Briscoe became a modern quarterback of Denver Broncos. This changed the whole face of the NFL. And, oh, we got to do something. That's what did it. AFL is what did it.
I agree. We know that the AFL actually far outpaced the NFL in terms of using African-American players. Willie Lanier, that came up in a discussion earlier with Mike Lewis Ingram on his show, about his pioneering the African-American at middle linebacker. But, yes, clearly, the AFL was light years ahead of the NFL in recognizing not only the talent that blacks had, but going down to the HBCUs to get them. You know, be it Al Davis, the Hunt family in Kansas City, you know, this was a way for them to build their own pipeline, and they understood that there is a strong contingency of players in the historically black colleges and universities. The Pittsburgh Steelers, a lot of their Hall of Famers they got from the HBCU circuit. And so, you know, we see now, again, these sort of changes, if you will, or shifts, but they also have a historical pattern, and we can look at what we've learned and say that there's really nothing new under the sun. When it comes down to it, as much as many owners would rather not have to have a team with, or a league with two-thirds of the players are black, still, at the end of the day, they know that with this quarterback position, they'd much rather have whites at the position than they would have blacks. And Doug Williams talked about this in his book. Most NFL owners won't draft blacks and have them because they worry about looking stupid if they don't pan out. He also mentioned that they don't use many blacks as backups, and we still see that in the league today. But what we're also recognizing is that these players, what they have to offer, they cannot be denied. And with the game being faster, more furious, you need to have someone who's durable and someone who can escape trouble. And I think that's why, you know, even with Nick Foles playing as well as he's playing, to his credit, Still, Chip Kelly has been reluctant to name him the starter for the rest of the year because he knows still there's a skill set that Vic brings that Nick Foles can't, and that's his ability to also make plays with his legs.
Okay, and that brings me to the next issue of intelligence. The media keeps saying, and they keep repeating this like a drum, that the African-American is not a smart quarterback. Hey, excuse me, what is 6'5" and 10" Wilson doing in Seattle? What is Michael Vick doing with the Philadelphia Eagles? If you don't go out of intelligence, something's wrong with you.
Right.
These guys run away from defenses and win games. Russell Wilson last week won the game with 3 linebackers, offensive linebackers hurt, and he still won the game.
Right. Yeah. I agree, and threw the ball beautifully. So, I like Wilson a lot. I liked him when he was at Wisconsin, and I like the fact that the Eagles picked him, and not the Eagles. I'm sorry, the Seahawks. Pardon me, two bird teams, but the Seahawks in this case. But I said it before, and it's worth reiterating, Gary. Wilson will win a Super Bowl. His leadership acumen is so strong. What he brings to the table, his players respond to it. He's earned the respect of that organization as well as the coach, and he's grossly underpaid, and he's been quiet about it. You know, he's quiet about it. But I think what's going to happen this year is going to be pretty extraordinary. But you're right. These players don't get the credit for what they have and what they possess. Historically, they were discriminated against because it was believed, like you said, they don't have the intelligence, nor do they have the leadership. And the thought was that they felt like white players wouldn't support and get behind a black quarterback. And in many ways, they wouldn't. James Harris was in Buffalo, who's now the director of pro personnel for the Lions.
Yes.
When he was in Buffalo, he had linemen who wouldn't block for him. He said he would see linemen, he would see players in the mall, they wouldn't even speak to him. White players wouldn't even speak to him. So that's the sort of entrenched racism that's been there. But now you look at what these guys are doing, making good decisions with the ball, distributing it well. You know, we talk about Robert Griffin III. He was strong academically, academic All-American, if I'm not mistaken, while he was at Baylor. But these quarterbacks and their tendency to run is where the media pundits have pounded them and treated their using their athleticism as a way to suggest that they could read the defense. And I said it before, Vic was answering questions about being able to read the defense as late as this past summer.
Yeah.
You know, and that's awful. You know, and then we know historically speaking, there was always a tolerance for quarterbacks who were white who ran the ball. The running quarterback, the dual threat, that was the norm in the 50s. We had this conversation before. You know, Paul Brown, he drafted Otto Graham out of Northwestern. Graham was a running back at Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
You see, and so the Bobby Lanes, the Sid Luckmans, these guys all were expected to run and throw. And when Tarkin did it in the 70s, he was lauded for it, the scrambler. When Spalback did it, he was Roger the Dodger. You see, but now when quarterbacks who are African-Americans demonstrate these capabilities in the 70s, they were written off. We know about how Joe Gilliam, Jefferson Street Joe Gilliam, when he ran the 40s, he didn't run full speed because he knew had he run full speed, he would have had his position changed. So now we see today a game where these quarterbacks have become a necessity, you know, and that's why we're seeing a greater proportion of them, not only because they're talented, but because they become a necessity.
I have a question for you, bring up Robert Griffin III. Robert Griffin III and Mike Shanahan are at the crossroads. Somebody is going to lead the Washington Football Club. Both of those guys cannot be, next year there has to be a change. And Robert Griffin III better watch his back, because when you call your coach by his first name, a player should never, ever, ever call his coach by his first name. So Robert Griffin better watch his back.
But I agree. And you know what? This came up before in a discussion earlier on Mike's show. When they were winning and everything was really, you know, jovial, he and the coach, and they were all chumsy, the media let that slide. But you best believe with the tide turning in the wrong direction, there's going to come a point where somebody's going to say, should he be calling Mike? Have they become too friendly? They'll couch it in such a way as to act as though they're probing, but they will really be making a bigger problem for him. And he's got to be clear about that. I think earlier in his career, we talk about last year when he's a rookie, having success, nobody made as much of a deal about it. But they're going to find ways to needle him. And this goes back to this idea about what happens when these quarterbacks who are African Americans who are now, you know, being celebrated, what happens when things don't go well. We saw that with Colin Kaepernick in the offseason. People making a major stink about the fact that he had a Miami Dolphins hat on. Are you kidding me? The owner for the San Francisco 49ers didn't say anything about him wearing a 49ers a Miami hat. Why? Because NFL merchandise, when it's sold, is split 32 ways. So yeah. The 49ers got a portion of whatever he paid for that hat. So why would the owner be complaining about it? So it's those little subtle indicators that the media and the fans feel like, well, we'll tolerate you, but we want to make sure you're conforming to what we want you to conform to. So Griffin calling Shanahan by his first name is something to keep an eye on for sure.
Michael, go on in the Discord. Michael, everything was so ready to roll.
Good sir. What's the afternoon, everyone? And, you know, I was cracking up because when I heard Kenneth say that, the conforming really is the key issue. They are afraid that black quarterbacks will not conform. You know, to a lesser degree, this is indicative of how it was for the Negro League baseball players and the style of ball that they played. You know, white ball players wasn't playing like that, and they couldn't play like that. And they couldn't ride 18 hours on a bus to some funky place where they didn't get anything to eat because, you know, they weren't going to be waited on, and they had to wait to go to some woodshed or go out back because they couldn't even go to the bathroom by themselves. But in spite of all of that, they still put out a superior product. We just didn't have enough information put forth to make them understand that the Negro League game was the better game of the two. It was attracting more fans and really was the superior product. But, you know, integration was thrown in everybody's faces, and the next thing you know, the whole system, the whole structure of black restaurants, black hotels, all of that was destroyed, you know, not long after Jackie Robinson put his John Henry on a contract. Not Jackie's fault, because I don't think anybody realized just what kind of dominoes were going to fall after that. But having said these things, the conforming is really the issue. They want their quarterback, if he could look like Colin Kaepernick as opposed to, say, Michael Vick, they might be satisfied with that. But the bottom line is, you know, they were the whole fuss about Kaepernick and Alex Smith was simply because Alex Smith had a team that was supposed to win the Super Bowl. And had the quarterback been the right color, maybe they would have. So here Kaepernick comes in with all this talent. And remember, this was Harbaugh's selection. Harbaugh drafted Kaepernick. So he knew he could ball. This wasn't an issue of that.
I'm going to ask you guys a question. I've been thinking about it all morning. What color is Kaepernick?
Thing going on here. The companies, all of those teams representing these 32 companies under this umbrella of this larger company, they can't have a black quarterback succeed where they are consistently winning Super Bowls. Remember this, Doug Williams wasn't the starter when the season began when he won.
No.
Jay Schrader was. Yes. And if you remember the movie The Replacements, they made Jay Schrader out to be an asshole, and I can tell you from interviewing him later on, he really was an asshole, but that's, I digress. The bottom line was everybody knew that Doug Williams was the best fit and that he was the cat that should be starting. And the players eventually made that clear to them, and that's what allowed Washington to carry on and win that Super Bowl. But having said these things now, you're in a whole different paradigm. Because now you've got Kaepernick, who's a light-skinned brother, and he's loaded with talent on a team that should do well in the playoffs. You've got Russell Wilson, who overcame the scenario of Seattle's management. Let's not minimize that. Russell Wilson was an afterthought. They had picked up their token white boy, Matt Flynn, who had won, had all of, like, one success in the National Football League. He won one dumb game, and he threw for a whole lot of yards in a system that allowed the passer to succeed, in a system now where wide receivers should catch. Gary, you should be catching balls now. Me and Kenneth should be catching balls with the way the system in the league is now. Because nobody can touch us the first 5 yards. Anybody can catch a ball. I'm not trying to minimize that, but that's really the truth. Anybody should be able to catch a ball in the National Football League. But having said that, now you've got Kaepernick, you've got Wilson, who defied whatever Seattle's business plan was because they realized how good he was. And they also said, you know what, we're giving Flynn all this money. And, you know, Russell Wilson, he's making $500,000. Look what we can do with the remaining money that we don't have to pay Flynn now. And what have they done? They've got free agents. They've built a better defense. All of this is part of the mix. They weren't thinking like this. They didn't have Russell Wilson in their consideration to that level. And you've got Robert Griffin. You've got other quarterbacks. You've got Cam Newton. They can't stand it. But see, they can't ignore the talent either. So this is the dichotomy they're going to be running into as this thing continues, and more quarterbacks like Teddy Bridgewater and Taj Boyd and Hundley from UCLA and Rivers from Washington, and all these brothers are coming out there messing with their minds because they can't. They know they need talent, but they don't want to sacrifice that talent at the expense of their own skin color and say, okay, the best man should be there for the job. This is no different a hiring situation than if you were hiring in the corporate vein or anywhere else. Sometimes the boss is going to pick somebody that looks like him.
Excellent. If I may chime in, I think it's an excellent question and an excellent point that's been brought out. And the other thing is this, that there's a legacy of this sort of racism against blacks that goes back to slavery. We know that the slave who had lighter skin was treated better than the one with darker skin.
Yes.
So here we see the same phenomena in the 21st century. And I agree that Vic, I know, Mike, you certainly asked this point out well in previous discussions, that a lot of what Vic has to do with the extra critical analysis that he receives, I don't doubt for a moment in time that it's not merely because he's black, but because he's a darker-skinned black. And they
he's a field
that
Negro.
Is,
that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, right, as opposed to the house, right? And so then he has to contend with that extra scrutiny and the less tolerance, all that goes up together. And even with RG3, I mean, he's got some very, you know, strong, pronounced African-American features. But again, now
he
that he's going through what he's going through, well, we see now how the media is feeling, but they're taking what he's doing, dissecting what he's doing. It was miraculous for him to even recover enough to even show up in the lineup. But now that things aren't going well, he's not the player he used to be. He's not this. He's not that. Well, we understand that. You know, Marino wasn't the player he was prior to his Achilles injury, and people didn't talk about him being lazy. But what was said about him, for people who were objective, he didn't rehab well enough. He didn't do enough of the hard work that was necessary. And we know that ultimately his career ended a lot earlier because he never really fully recovered from that Achilles. But
exactly.
On the point, you got a guy like RG3, and now he suffered that. I agree. The Russell Wilson, the Kaepernick discussion, even Cam Newton, a greater sense of, you know, the media, you know, giving these guys whatever in terms of coverage, but the overriding attempt to kind of undermine them, to cut them down, is not a case with a Vic, and now we're seeing more with RG3. So I think there is a color scheme going on here in terms of how the media sees these respective quarterbacks.
Well, the reason why I brought this up is because I've seen the reaction of the way they interview Wilson and the way they interview Kaepernick compared to the interviews with RG3 and Michael Vick. It's a totally different interview.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I brought it up, because again, it's a non-threatening Negro, right?
Exactly. And that he's humble. And he's humble. Mm-hmm. He doesn't spout off. He's not, you know, strutting and stuff like that. But let's remember, even though Kaepernick is light-skinned, remember, they wanted to dog out Kaepernick. We wrote on it on BASN about how this punk tried to make Kaepernick out to be some thug because he had tattoos all over his body and never once when never once interviewed the guy and didn't even know until after it came out that all Kaepernick's tats were Bible verses. So even though Kaepernick was probably closer to Tim Tebow than he was to Tupac Shakur, it didn't matter. This guy had a plan how he was going to demonize Kaepernick because he said, well, you know, he looked like he just came out of Lompoc or one of the, you know, state prisons out in Cali and whatnot. And instead, Kaepernick was this guy who was very spiritual and stuff like that, but it didn't matter because he was trying to set the tone for what was going to be said because he didn't like how he looked. He didn't even interview the guy. He didn't call his agent. He did nothing. He just made a predetermination on what Kaepernick was like, and Kaepernick had the last laugh ultimately. But the bottom line was, we know what the media does, and his job was to put a hit on Kaepernick literally in the press because they didn't like how he looked, and they were still upset that poor little Alex didn't get the chance to quarterback the San Francisco 49ers to the Super Bowl.
Well, and that's
why, was in a bucket.
And that's why Rudy for Kennedy today going on TV. That's why Rudy for, everyone, Alex meant to get his Super Bowl that he didn't get to.
You know, Gary, let me throw this in the pot because I, Kenneth has really done a fantastic job with this book, and it's something I think people need to really pay attention to. Here's something to consider. You know how we talk about LeBron James and how I got to a point where I didn't even want to see the playoffs because I knew if LeBron hadn't won, they were going to climb all in his black ass about what he couldn't do anymore and stuff.
Yeah.
So to me, it had gotten past basketball. And I want to ask you and Kenneth and anybody else who's out there listening, has it gotten past sports for you because race has become so ingrained in this thing now and you know that the notions or the intent of the media really isn't a secret anymore?
Well, you know, let me go first. A couple weeks ago, man, This incognito thing broke out.
Mm-hmm.
I was at the point where I was like, why am I doing this? What are we doing? What are we doing this for? And at the point where I was almost sick of pro football. I love pro football. Like 10 years ago. I love baseball, but because baseball has become so hypocritical, I put the sport down, and football is going directly in that same mode, and they don't stop this nonsense. We're going to have problems 10 years from now.
I agree.
Well, the NFL has always counted on the fact that no matter how good or how bad its product was, it was all, and I'm talking about individually in each of the different cities, they knew collectively their product, or at least they felt their product, was always going to be in demand. And people are starting to understand now that, you know, well, at least they should be understanding that it's not running like that anymore. You know, people aren't sending their kids to play Pop Warner Ball as much anymore because of what was hidden, what came out in the documentary about the concussions and the fact that the NFL held this information back for at least 20 years. So, you know, you got even football players wanting to make sure that their kids don't have to play football. They understand more that it's a job that we're talking about now and not some calling or whatever that in spite of their passion, they realize, you know, they're sacrificing themselves because they're going to shorten their potentially shorten their lifespans for doing something that they really aren't going to get overtly rewarded for unless they're at the very pinnacle of what they do.
I mean, what happened to Tony Dorsett is I saw Tony Dorsett this week. I was like, look, I'm no Cowboy fan. I don't like the Cowboys. I saw Tony Dorsett on TV this week. I said, what are we doing?
They know what they're doing. They've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah, and this guy gets drunk to his kids. He goes to the Raiders. And we sit there and enjoy the game. I mean, come on now, we got to stop this.
Right.
And that's true. And then, like, with the whole thing, with the quote-unquote, and I would put it in quotations, you know, to qualify probably, this Redskins deal is awful. and it too has a long-standing tradition in the National Football League. And as much as I'm sensitive to it, I've been very adamant. I've been outspoken about it. I wrote about it before it actually became an issue that's in vogue like it is now, condemning it.
Right.
One of the references in my book is that of law professor Kendall Shropshire. He used to be an executive with the NFL Players Association, but he wrote a book called Sports in Black and White in America. He made comment about how the term Redskins is the most offensive term in the lexicon of Native Americans. And what he did, he gave more insight. He said that the term Redskin speaks to the process by which Native Americans were skinned, and those skins were in turn sold. 80 cents for men, 60 cents for women, and 20 cents for children. But what's even more remarkable than the racism and this whole spin on his name that actually makes a mockery of the genocide of Native American people, but George Preston Marshall, who's the original owner of the Washington Redskins, he was a staunch racist himself. So as much as that nickname is offensive to Native Americans, the structural racism that the NFL practiced against blacks, truly speaking, and the Washington franchise in particular, is perhaps worse than what Native Americans had to endure from the NFL, that is. George Preston Marshall at least had a Native American coach, even if it was a way for him to kind of tie in the whole Redskins concept. But the point is, there was a Native American coach he had, you know, in the early part of the league's development. But the franchise used to be the Boston Braves. Then when they moved to the nation's capital, they became the Washington Redskins. But what he did was Marshall is described as the architect of the gentleman's agreement that barred black players from 1934 to 1946. And we was talking about this in some communications, but Marshall maintained his position that he wasn't going to allow blacks on his team up until 1960. So this racism is real. And I think while we should be talking about how offensive it is to Native Americans, because it is, and we should be standing with our Native American brothers, but we should also be inclined to mention, you know what, this name and this organization has always perpetrated racism against blacks as well, and that this owner who makes a mockery of the Redskins' history and this whole Native American thought, this same owner, that is George Preston Marshall, was steadfastly against blacks being in the National Football League, and he maintained that until the 1960s.
President Jonathan Joe Kennedy told President Marshall, if you have a black on a team, by the end of the week, we will not allow you to play in Washington, D.C. Well, he got a black player a week later, and the black Americans don't know this history. They have no clue.
Right.
They have no idea about this history.
That's so true. And I'm glad you brought that up, Garrett. Greg, Mike, he's going to chime in.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, bro. Yeah, please. Because I wanted to pick up on your point there. You know, it's ironic that they went from George Preston Marshall to Daniel Snyder, a Jew, who knows what it's like to have been discriminated against, and he is adamant about making sure that pejorative remains Washington's nickname. And he's not doing it out of anything other than sheer arrogance, because he knows if that name were to be changed tomorrow to the Washington Warriors or the Washington Generals or anything else, he's going to make money no matter what. His sales from merchandising ain't going to change. If anything, they'll go up because it's a franchise change name. He won't have to change the logo. He doesn't have to change the colors. All he has to do is change how much is going in his bank account. And this arrogant son of a bitch is still going to go right on ahead and steadfastly say that, no, it means fighting spirit and all this other BS, when really it is exactly as Kenneth said, it is a pejorative, and brothers should be standing with our Native and First Nations brothers to say, this ain't right. And all those stupid fans who indulge in this, they should be smacked upside the head for this.
And the reason why this is continuing going on is because of the lack of political power and the lack of economic power. And they had people, Native Americans, the Washington, D.C., who were representatives of the state. This wouldn't be an issue. If they had a gazillion dollars in the bank, this would be an issue. But because most Native Americans are poor, and they only do Native American representatives in Washington, D.C. This is why it continues.
Yeah, amazing. But I agree. In fact, when we look at the political system, a lot of people in Washington, congressmen, I mean, they pulled for the Washington franchise. So a lot of them have been on mute. Now, some of them have come on a little more recently, and they've been, you know, saying things, but nothing forceful, just putting their concerns in writing, because some of them have Native American constituencies. But, yeah, I mean, I agree. Relatively speaking, you got Native American communities who are a little more poor than others. But they also have some strong advocates, as we all know. And they're being heard a lot more now, which is great. But if I can, I'd like to go back to the history that you were citing, Gary, about John F. Kennedy, because I think it's an interesting irony as we approach the 50th year anniversary of his assassination. One of the things we don't do enough in terms of discussing sports culture, in the NFL in particular, is how the Kennedy administration, even the civil rights movement, were instrumental in getting the Redskins to integrate. And then we look at a Pete Rozelle, who was then a commissioner of the National Football League, and a Roger Goodell. Goodell's position is similar to that of Rozelle. Rozelle didn't get involved with the dispute about Marshall having an all-white team. His team, he declared him to be the team of the South. Rozelle said it was a club matter, even though he was getting pressure from civil rights groups saying you need to have them integrated. And, of course, Marshall said he wouldn't. And then, as you mentioned, Gary, the Kennedy administration stepped to him after King and others were saying, John F. Kennedy, what happened to you, you know, bringing this civil rights legislation with a stroke of a pen? And so then Kennedy pressed his Secretary of the Interior, Udall Stewart, to tell Marshall he would not be able to build a stadium on land that was a part of a federal park system as long as he kept an all-white team. That stadium is today RFK Stadium. And so it was only because Marshall would not get a stadium built that he agreed to bring on a black player. That's the only way he did it. And he was angry that he was made to do it under those circumstances. And here's the other interesting twist. The player, of course, who was instrumental in this change was Ernie Davis, the Elmira Express. He was the first pick. The Redskins were so bad because they were all white. But he kept that going because they were like a representation of the Confederacy, so to speak. Even though the Confederacy got crushed, many white Southerners loved them because they fought for what they believed in, which is all-white culture, all-white society. But on the point, what happened was that Marshall was given this ultimatum, no stadium if you don't integrate. So he did not draft he drafted Davis, but traded him to Cleveland, and Cleveland sent over Bobby Mitchell.
Right.
And Bobby Mitchell became the first person to integrate the Redskins in the modern era. But what's interesting is this. Marshall got a stadium, but he was so obstinate, he told Rozelle and he told the Kennedy administration, I'll integrate him, my team, but it won't be this year. So they played the first year in RFK, what is now RFK Stadium, all white. But in 62, he integrated. The next year, in 63, Dr. King goes to Washington and delivers the I Have a Dream speech. A couple of months later, Kennedy is assassinated. Nobody brings these historical artifacts out and brings them together and question if, in fact, Kennedy's decision to make the Redskins integrate may have, in fact, contributed to the climate that led to his assassination. That's an interesting piece.
That's an excellent point when you consider how close we are to the 50th anniversary of him being murdered and our country being a banana republic. I think that's an excellent point, and we can't ignore that. When Stuart Udall did do that, he made Preston Marshall back up. Remember, this is the 60s. White males didn't back up for anything. And you got to also remember the whole Kennedy angle. I to get some more meat in Kenneth's sandwich, where is he going with this? Remember, in the 60s, Irish Catholics weren't part of this. Catholics, period, weren't part of this. This was about as WASP as you could get, and everybody was out of the loop. You could have money, but you didn't have access to real control and power. So when he broke down the door, when what they assumed was going to be another WASP election, it changed the whole paradigm everywhere. And I have to say this because I said this before on my show. Since this is so close to the 50th anniversary of Kennedy getting murdered, I would suggest that everybody take a look at JFK. Now, if you don't want to look at the whole movie, you don't have to. If you look at the first 5 minutes, it tells you everything you need to know. When General Eisenhower is there telling everybody, the game is changing, y'all.
He's telling them, I'm a soldier. You know, I don't want to fight. I did my fighting. But now the game's changing because our country's going to be in the business of selling weapons to whomever the hell wants to buy them, and I'm not down with that. And that's why I'm stepping off, not just because my terms are up, because this is not going to be the country that you expected to live in up to this point. So when he says that little speech before the movie goes on, that's the key to the whole movie, and I think it also ties in with what Kenny just said.
But President Eisenhower also warned Kennedy about the military-industrial complex. He told Kennedy, you must dismantle the military-industrial complex. Kennedy did not do it. Here we are, 2013, and guess what? Guess the rest of the country, the military-industrial complex. You warned.
Gary, I have to leave, but I do want to say in leaving that the whole issue of black men leading anything is always going to be a sore spot in this country, whether people want to admit it or not. And ironically, it was when Attorney General Holder said that we're cowards when it comes to race, that the chickens truly have come. We have come, it's come home to roost. From the standpoint that they are so fearful of what Holder is as a man, that our own Congress, whose tax dollars we all support, that's right-wing dollars, that's left-wing dollars, that's everybody's dollars, our own Congress supported trying to get him eliminated or taken out from his job, you know, so that they could simply make sure that he couldn't become a Supreme Court justice down the road. Because as Fred likes to say, you know, Democrats like to win arguments. Republicans like to win the war. And it's this mindset that's put us in this trick bag now, whether it's the health care plan or how we're living in this country, because we've got others who have been bought out by corporate interests who are trying to screw us over. And that's everybody. If you're not part of the elites, you're screwed. And, you know, unfortunately, the Bubbas and Bubbettes of the world, some don't realize that until after they've been screwed, and then they pissed at us. So the bottom line here goes a lot deeper than just sports, which is why our shows always walk the line between sports, politics, and other things, because picture is always very gray, to quote you, Gary, in terms of trying to define what is and what isn't. And I think thank you for having a show like this, and thanks to Ken for being able to write a book like that. And put empirical facts in front of people's faces so that they can't sit there and just poo-poo. If you don't like them, you don't like them, but you're not going to like them because of some BS. Here's your facts. You deal with them any way you want.
There you go. Thank you, Mr. Ingram.
Thank you, guys. Have a great weekend, everybody. And again, thank you, Ken.
Likewise. My man. Okay, good luck. We'll talk again soon, Mike. Take it easy.
Yes, sir. Have a great weekend, everyone.
You too.
Thank you, Mr. Ingram. So you ready on the wrong. You catch him 11:01 Pacific before my show every Saturday and Wednesday night at 6-9 p.m. Eastern Time. Kenny, I'm gonna take a break here. You wanna stay on and come by another break?
Well, I tell you, you can go ahead if you want me to give you a holler back. That's no problem. But you know, take your break and do what you need to do.
Okay.
I'm gonna go ahead and tackle some things, and listen, we'll catch up and talk again real soon. But you got my number.
Good job. Thank you very much.
My man, thank you, Gary. Have a good day.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come right back. In honor of the Eagles, I'm going to play this. Honor of the Philadelphia Eagles, and Michael Vick. the right way. Thank you, Kenny Robinson. We'll come back another day.
To One Love Radio on Wednesdays at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time with your hosts Rhonda Harper and Imani Wilmot on blogtalkradio.com.
If you're looking for real talk on sports, politics, and other important issues, tune in to The Bachelor Pad every Monday through Friday beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. L.A. Bachelor and Tony McClain look to enlighten, empower, and educate people on the topics that people are talking about, but discuss them from a social, economical, and racial standpoint. It's sports, breaking news, updates, politics, great guests, and music in between. It's The Bachelor Pad every Monday through Friday beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Listen at www.thebachelorpad.biz. That's www.thebachelorpad.biz. Follow us at facebook.com/padnation and at pad for truth on Twitter. That's at pad number 4 truth.
Check out In Our Opinion with Southern Eagle and Steel City Storm each Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern.
yeah, dude, stop with the lectures, stop with the threats. Be a human being, let the guy go up there and say goodbye, for God's sake.
Rick Pocket is another one. He pounded me probably about 4 or 5 times in my career. I never want to fight Cam Neely, never want to fight.
And I knew with the power that I possessed, well, I could tear a man's ear off. Again, only in theory, because I've never done it yet.
How do you punish an Amish kid? Make him watch TV for 2 hours?
Sports talk, sports talk, sports talk. The way it was meant to be.
And the other sponsors are New England Informer, Doreen Wade, CEO of Boston, Massachusetts, Reality Sports Group in Roslyn, Virginia, WCLM 1450, and WCLMRadioOnline.com. And then the B.D. Brown, the B.D. Brown Show, and today the little old Mystery Man. Every Saturday with his music in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. WCLM 1450 and WCLM Online Radio.com. Pat Freeman and WUFO, the Mighty Oba, 1080 AM, Buffalo, New York. And Robert Rogers, CEO of BSN, and the family of BSN writers, New York City, New York. Can't forget season 9 and the 07. Also, Travis Singleton is Kicks for Kids. If a high school kid gets good grades, he will give you sneakers. Go to his website, Ken Singleton, Kicks, number 4, Kids, all one word, look it up. Ken Singleton. Join the Gold Caravan, Soul Patrol, Pan Nation, and WCLM on Facebook.com. Okay, let's get out of the way. Hope you enjoyed the Kenny Robinson interview. Get the book, Victim to Victory. News of the week. I want to thank ESPN for giving BSN the props, because last week, word for word, last weekend, on their Monday night pregame show, they used the Never Go and Soul Radio to Raw for their almost half of their show. So, as I say, that's about to do what they want to do. We do what we got to do. And, you know, ESPN can't do that because they're legally tied to these entities. That's why they can't do what we do. Mainly football, mainly baseball, the NFL, the NBA, and soccer. They're all tied to ESPN. So legally, they cannot blast like we do. That's why we do what we do. We had Calvary come over here. And what's up, Cowboy?
The joys and pain of sports talk radio. What do you say to that, G?
You know,
it's been a rough day.
Yeah, I mean, what are they doing about Virginia State?
Well, still, no official statement has come out from Virginia State, and I wish that PR people would get on top of this, because even the local station here on the FM dial, you have a lot of people want to talk about it, but unfortunately, you know, this being a, should we say, heavy populated area of Virginia State alumnus, they don't have a way to really get their venom, get their frustration out of just, you know, wanting to defend their school, because they're seeing national people, local and national, just keep just barraging. I mean, they have social media. You have the Facebook page. You know, on my Facebook, Reggie Howe, go to Reggie Howard. You see it pitching my Trojan. And no, I'm not taking my Trojan. I'm leaving my Trojan pitch up there. I'm not taking it down. So I want to know I got Trojan pride here. So that ain't coming down. But the bottom line is that, yes, sir.
I want you to tell the folks at Gold Caravan about your show this morning. King Khalid, I want you to tell people what happened.
Basically, as Dr. Fred Witt said, you have to tell your own story. And we pride ourselves in coming to HBCUs and networking with people like Luke Williams, Donald Ware, George Johnson, Mark Gray, and a plethora of other people in our black sports media was Harold Bell. Well, with 14 years of doing sports talk radio, I've had the honor and pleasure of networking with a lot of great people. And Luke Williams, who's in North Carolina, who was at the event, had inside information, and all I did was share with my audience that nobody else seemed to want to get the facts out. And as we talked about that, this young man, unfortunately, that was arrested and charged had a previous criminal record.
Yes.
And that's the sad part about it. What really hurts G is that, as Commissioner Curry said, that you always have more security than what you need. And, again, I understand the CIAA has been through some financial problems, but I was very disturbed, again, that they had this event on a school campus when they should have had it in Durham for the last 3 or 4 years at a neutral site. Where, I mean, it's a class facility. I mean, the people at Durham open their arms for this situation. So, again, I'm not taking no shots at the current commissioner, but, excuse me, sometimes, you know, you have to look at the big picture rather than thinking you're going to cut costs and save money. Now she's had over $1 million worth of negative publicity that could have turned around and been $1 million worth of positive publicity. And
yeah.
The sad thing about it that you have these people who have no love, no caring of HBCUs now having license to go out to the HBCUs and make comments like, I need to get combat pay when I cover these events. And God bless Brother Kingston, California. He heard it, and he's going to address that station about it. You know,
well,
I'm not going to do anything about it, but it's up to the alumni and people out here who are outraged need to call the show. I mean, I know you're in California, but like I told people, I can't do it by myself. You know,
right.
If you're outraged, you mad about it, then y'all got to get a group together and tell them people that you don't appreciate what they're doing, and you either want them to have a retraction of what that person said, or either that person needs to give a fact about his statement, or he needs to make a public apology. You
now,
know.
What they say today? This alleged station, what they say today?
No, well, this is in the preliminary stages. Like I said, Brother California is already getting the statement together. I'm sure once you get here, email it to me, and I'm sure once you've been on this, you'll get an email copy of it. You know, so, and again, yeah, once we get this information, we'll pass it on to the Cove Nation and others out there, and we're going to let them know that we're not going to tolerate this. I mean,
no.
If you want to go ahead and make statements, you need to back them up,
and
this is wrong, so, yeah.
This is why ESPN gets away with what they get away with. And they,
nobody challenged them.
I am always in the ESPN behind because they keep doing this.
The sad thing about it, Gary, that we have athletes that want to skin and grant and be on TV so bad that they would sign their birthrights over just to be skin and grin and smiling on that TV. And they don't understand. The only thing they don't look at LeBron James. In high school, they kiss his behind. As soon as he made that move from Cleveland, he was our public enemy number one. They did everything in time to make him a. You know, come on.
Well, we haven't learned yet. You know, as soon as we get that right, everything's up and stop. If we would join together, support each other, like I support WCLM. You support the Good Up and Go. If we support each other. That's the way it's supposed to be. And we don't
Gary, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me? Okay, sorry. You know, on the road, man, driving. That's what happened. So I apologize for that. Yeah, but I say again, Gary, the thing that really hurts me about this, that a lot of young people that had nothing to do with this were looking for this. You know, you said the volleyball tournament was canceled. And you had a lot of seniors out there that this was their year. And also, the ramification of this, that a lot of people that didn't play in these games, possibly they won't make the playoffs in the tournament. And I can tell you right now, NCAA don't want schools like Virginia State in there from the get-go because they don't want to share that money.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, Winston, they'll get in because they were number two in their region, and also they played in that championship game last year. So they get in, there won't be no problem. But, I mean, all I got to say is I'm just saying to the commissioner out there, ma'am, all I'm asking you to do is that the wheel has been reinvented. We don't need to reinvent the wheel. All I'm saying again, if people out there that can help you, please listen to them. That's all I'm saying. Because this can be turned around in due time to a positive. I mean, if Penn State can come back from the disaster they did, I'm sure Virginia State can too.
Yeah, man, yeah, you got it.
Yeah, I will, Gary. Like I said, next week, man, we're going to get you on because I'm looking for you to call this week. I know we're tied in heaven, but we have to face
you,
Big D.
You got to rock and roll, man.
Yeah, well, I had to let Mission Man, I shout out to him. He did me such a favor. He gave up 15 minutes of his time to look out for me. You know, and I told him I really appreciate it. That's why he came at the end. You know, I said, I need a big favor. He said, for you, cowboy, no problem. So that's what happens when you work with people, you know, over a period of time. You ask for help, and they give it to you.
Yeah,
you know,
knows,
especially
for
a cause. You know, but great job, Big G. Go ahead and rock down the road. I know you can wrap this thing up, man, but great job as always, my friend.
WZLO, cowboy, ready.
Yes, sir. Take care.
Remember, Virginia, thank you for coming in. Yeah, we're ready. Let me do this. One more break. I get my notes together. And we can go on the show. I think we're gonna make it regular time. Let's do this first. Regular time. I think we gotta make. Do a break here and come back for news of the week and we're out of here. Great show so far, hope you enjoy it. My deep dog. Tuesday, the NFL and the middle of Miami Dolphins myself, told my other drivers to wait for the interview with Martin, and they met on a Thursday. The Philadelphia the free agents early at 8-9, Pittsburgh Pirates, Martin Burton. And then the thing the Phillies are Martin Burton, a black player in the Phillies. That's very interesting. The coach of the year is Cleveland Indians, Terry Francona, and Pittsburgh Clint Hurdle. Martin Burton. Catcher, Benji Menino. Benny Menino goes back to the Raiders as a coach. And that's to improve the Raiders this year. Wednesday, the Buffalo Sabres, the last place Buffalo Sabres, blew up their coach down. This is the third head coach fired this year, and that is only November 16th is the third coach to go. Already, the Flyers are first, Florida Panthers are second, and now the Buffalo Sabres fired their coach. They hired Ed Nolan and Pat Labonte as general manager. The Black and Silver are mourning one of his own as Todd Griffin passed away at the operating table. And Todd Griffin never bit the Oakland Raider misfit Gagner, one of the great tight ends. Todd Griffin, 57-year-old, passed away on Wednesday. Too bad the Dallas Cowboys didn't get him. They had him and they released him. On Thursday, the Saluki cousin, Northern Illinois University Huskies, remained undefeated and they beat Ball State 48-27. And they could be the BCS gatecrashers. We'll see. They have another game to go. Maybe two more games to go for the end of the season. The Cy Young Award winners are L.A. Dodger Crenshaw and Detroit Tiger Max Scherzer. They win the Cy Young Award. And for the MVP and newly deserved Miguel Cabrera for the Detroit Tigers and Andrew McCutchen for the Pittsburgh Pirates. And they had MVP since Barry Bonds in 92-93. And of course, the Raiders are whining again because, we can't get into Miguel Cabrera again. We need to give it to Steve Trout of the LA Angels. Really? What did Miguel Cabrera do the first half of the season? And what did Steve Trout do? This is why baseball continues to fall in the graces of minority, because it's clearly Miguel Cabrera was the MVP this year. They don't see it that way. Another incident, which I think is very suspicious. Florida State quarterback Wilson is being investigated for 2012 incidents a year ago. But why are you bringing up now? A year ago. I say, though, this is an investigation of incident happened on campus. And the only reason I can say is, can we all say Heisman Trophy and black quarterback? Look, I can tell you this. they want Menzel to win another trophy. So you smear the black quarterback. Okay? It smells. It just digs. No evidence. And almost a year and a half later, it stinks. More and more say the Ed Reed will be playing in the Meadowlands of New Jersey for the New York Jets. You think Coach Gary Kubiak will be coaching for his team against the Oakland Raiders? That's great. He come back with Raiders. Wonderful. The Indianapolis Colts on Thursday night got a real scare for the Tennessee Titans. The Titans got a 17-point lead before the Colts got their edges started and win the game 30-27. And the Warriors, yeah, the W's, the West Coast, the Golden State Warriors, are giving notice to everybody in the NBA. As they beat the Oklahoma State Thunder, 116-115, and they are 5-1 at home, and nobody wants to come and play in that old arena. The Sharks keep the excitement going as they beat the Vancouver Canucks on Thursday night. Randy Boyle gets a winning goal with time running down. And, oh man, my New York Knicks are struggling. Jeremy Lin and Dwight Howard as the Houston Rockets come to New York and beat the Knicks 109-103. And Jeremy Lin is 4-1 against the Knicks since leaving the team two and a half years ago. And yes, the Rockets are for real. It's Friday, the Eating Over. Did you support black businesses? If not, you know what your homework is. You know what you gotta do this Friday. Alright. And we move on to Falcons and Dolphins are right behind them. Teddy Bridgewater is the award at the end of the year. The power ratings, the other side of power ratings are Seattle Seahawks, Broncos, New Orleans Saints, Panthers, Niners, Chiefs, and Patriots at a power rating 1 through 7. And the games of the weekend, Monday night, Blockbuster, New England against Carolina, other Blockbuster, Kansas City at Denver, Green Bay Packers at the New York Giants, the Niners at New Orleans, and their only big games, Baltimore at Chicago, and of course, the Washington Football Club is at Philadelphia. Philadelphia is on a 10-game losing streak at home. I never understood that. So there you go. Oh, the Raiders. I can't forget the Raiders are playing in Houston. They left yesterday afternoon. That is a schedule for the NFL. Bobcats, and then all flying to New York. We're the New York Knicks. I think they're at New Orleans. Later on today, Detroit at Houston. Indiana at Chicago. Boston at Minnesota. Oklahoma City at Milwaukee. And the Golden State Warriors host the Utah Jazz. And the LA Clippers host the Brooklyn Nets, formerly known as the New York Nets, the New Jersey Nets, or New York Nets, take your pick. That's the scoreboard for the association on the GLC. The big game in the NCAA today, Oklahoma State at Texas, Auburn playing Georgia, and the Auburn winning 27-17. The BCS Bowl this week, Alabama 1, Florida 2, Ohio State 3, Tampa 4, Baylor 5. HBCU news, as we already went to the Virginia State issue, the IAAA, Darryl Williams was named coach, Livingstone head football coach. Bethune-Cookman Wildcats losing Robert State first, 27, and big upset. Hampton-Hampstead, Florida. Zachary Bulldogs beat the Rattlers of Florida 8-M. And Mills College upset the quarterbacker of the Tuskegee and threw the Black Bulls into complete chaos. As you can tell, Jersey State number 1, Mizzou Cookman dropped number 2. Jersey State Tigers moved out to number 3. Alcorn State went at 4. Malachi State Bulldogs, number 5. Southern Jaguars, number 6. Alabama State Hornets, number 7. North Carolina A&T Aggies, number 8. Delaware State, number 9. And Prairie View A&M Panthers, number 10. As we go into the mid-majors, Winston-Salem State Rams will not play this weekend because of the incident. Number 2 Virginia State Trojans, same predicament. Miles Cornberry, number 3, and the Tuskegee Golden Tigers, number 4, and Lane Dragon, number 5. The NCAA mid-majors and the Missouri Valley Conference take 1 and 2. And North Dakota State, because the MVP SBC champion, Eastern Illinois, number 2, Eastern Washington, number 3, Sam Houston State, number 4, and Fordham Rams, number 4. Let's see if we can go to college. Florida, University of Florida beat Duke. The Noles beat Syracuse. And that guarantees the Noles at number 2 the rest of the year. Oklahoma State beat Texas 31-13. As they move on, Oregon beat Utah 17-7. And the third quarter is Auburn 27, Georgia 17. And you got the scores for the day. And let's see, what else? Any other goodies? No other goodies. Today, North Dakota State Bison will play the Youngstown State Penguins later on this evening at the game of Missouri Valley. Illinois State will go to Carbondale and play the SIU Salukis. So, there you go. Missouri Valley News. MEC News. Oh, man, the big one. Number one Wildcats, the Paducah will play Hampton today. And Alcon State plays the Bears of Morgan State later on today. Last week, the Morgan State Bears beat the Aggies, which slipped from number 5 to number 8 in the poll. And the Morgan State Bears beat A&T 24-23. In the PGA, 3-2 from Taiwan with the Masano Classic in Japan. She becomes the first woman from Taiwan to win this year. The Manor in Georgia in the McLarity Classic. And that'll be the last one in the United States this year. At Tiger Woods in the Turkish Airlines Open. Tied for third last week. Adam Scott wins the Australian Open in a rain-delayed match. And this week, they're playing in Melbourne. And it should be over because it's tomorrow, their time. In the PBA, the Pro Bowlers, it'll be Fort Wayne, Indiana, and Bethesda, Washington State. Next week, the PBA will be at Citrus Heights, California, Northern California, for the Steve Cook Firestone Classic. If you're in the area, go up to Citrus Heights. It's right near the freeway for the Steve Cook Firestone Classic. And it's always the Dallas Federer semifinals. As usual, in London, NASCAR, as we wrap up the season, this last race, Harvick and Kenseth and Johnson will go out to the wire as they go for the 40 EcoBoost 400 in Homestead, Florida, this tomorrow, the last weekend of the rainy season for NASCAR. And there you go, wrap it up for the day. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Kenny Robinson, Gamba Reggie, and Michael Ingram coming into the show. Good questions, good information. I'm going to come back next week. I'm trying to get Rhonda Harper to get on the show next week. Our sponsors, Reality, Virginia Reality Sports, WCLM 1450, and WCLMRadioOnline.com. Richmond, Virginia. Michael Ingram, told the radio on the wall. But I'll be at the masterpass.biz. Masterpass.biz. And Pat Freeman, a mighty old Bob of WUFO 1080 Buffalo, New York. And we gotta remember the late, great Roy Rogers, BSN, New York City, New York, and Doreen Wade, New England Reform Magazine, and Boston, Massachusetts, and last, CMI Bruce Bucket, and Ellisville, California. Well, hope you have a good weekend. Hey. you know who she is. From New York City, New York. Actually, Brooklyn. I need to get from Brooklyn tonight.